Good morning. On today's programme, the story of the family of a drug dealer banished from one of Canada's Indigenous communities, and why Turks are mourning the death of a filmmaker and peace negotiator. But first we go to Tunisia, where the president has reacted angrily to international criticism of the sentencing of 37 political prisoners to harsh jail terms and the detention of one of their lawyers. Foreign governments and human rights organisations are calling for their release, but despite the ongoing protests, President Kais Saied and his judiciary refuse to back down. Alicia Voltman has this report from Tunis.
Tunisia's opposition group, the National Salvation Front, are demanding the release of 37 political prisoners and their lawyer, Ahmed Swab. The trial was effectively conducted behind closed doors. The final guilty verdicts and sentences were passed down at the end of April, and lawyers are currently filing their clients' cases with the appeal court. International human rights and justice groups are demanding that all be released or at least have access to normal judicial process in their appeal hearing, rather than the remote trial proposed by Tunisia's authorities. This comes after a large protest on May Day following Swab's arrest. He dared to criticise Tunisia's judiciary during the trial of the 37 political prisoners and exiles, accusing judges of submitting to pressures and the politicisation of the case. The trial has drawn stern international criticism, including statements from French and German governments, not just for the severe sentencing of between 4 and 66 years, but because the defendants were not given a fair trial. It's been called a show trial. UN's Volker Turk said the process was marred by violations of fair trial and due process rights, raising serious concerns about political motivations. Saied's angry riposte called this criticism blatant foreign interference in his country's affairs. According to Swab's son, Saeb, a few days after the trial, about a dozen police officers came to the lawyer's home to arrest him before taking him to the anti-terrorism brigade's offices for interrogation. A highly respected lawyer and former judge, Swab is also a greatly loved public figure, which moved people to protest, demanding his release. Swab is one of a dozen or so lawyers currently in prison in Tunisia. Lawyers and judges have long clashed with President Saied since his July 2021 power grab. Saied dissolved the High Judicial Council in February 2022 and later sacked 47 judges before the 2022 referendum, where he brought all powers of state, including the judiciary, under his direct control. Now, criticising the judiciary is, in effect, criticising Saied himself. The case against the 37 political prisoners goes back to February 2023, when police raided the houses of 20 people from the world of politics, news media and business. Many of those arrested were from the National Salvation Front, a coalition of activists, lawyers and politicians across the spectrum of politics, who campaigned against what they called Saied's coup d'etat and dictatorship. The charges were conspiracy against state security and forming terror groups to overthrow the government. Over time, the number of those in prison swelled, including the leader of Ennahda Party and former Speaker of Parliament Rashid Ghannouchi. Their families and human rights organisations have been campaigning for their release ever since their arrests, denouncing the inhuman conditions in prison and the negative impact on their health. Saied, a former university lecturer in law, had won his first election in 2019 on an anti-corruption ticket. His 2021 power move was initially welcomed because at that time Tunisia was in political chaos. However, Saied's regime has been characterised by his relentless pursuit of creating a new political order and harsh crackdowns on any dissent, rather than seriously addressing Tunisia's chronic economic and social woes. Saied has always tried to portray himself as an ordinary man of the people and once again has been doing his signature walkabouts and meet and greets. Once his appearance was met with cheers of support, but now members of the public plead for him to help find solutions for their suffering and hunger. Saied's responses have been sometimes disturbingly bizarre, if not downright mocking, and one member of the public went as far to call Saied a failed president to his face. Where once popular hatred was aimed at Ennahda politicians, public sympathy has now shifted towards those imprisoned and growing admiration for the lawyers fighting for them. What remains of Tunisia's opposition to Kais Saied, the National Salvation Front, continues to demand the release of their comrades. But Saied and his judiciary show no sign of backing down. But critics say that the arrest of a popular public figure, a respected man of the law, Ahmed Swab, is one arrest too far. For World Report, I'm Alicia Volkman in Tunis, Tunisia.
Next, we go to Canada, and some unusual frontier justice played out in an indigenous community in British Columbia in recent weeks. The family of a man accused of being involved in drug trafficking in the northern archipelago of Haida Gwaii has been forced to leave the community and has been banished. The man is also accused of a targeted killing. It highlights the drug crisis that many native communities face, as Dan Karpinchuk reports.
First Nations leaders across Canada have often voiced frustration and anger over what they describe as a toxic drug crisis. And one community says it has had enough and has taken its own steps to deal with it, a kind of rough justice. What pushed community members over the edge was a targeted hit-and-run killing of a resident. Luke Pearson was struck and killed by a vehicle in late April in Skidigat, a community of about 700 people. Pearson was described as a devoted and caring son, brother, and loving partner, a marine mechanic and outdoorsman. A social media post says he lived a humble and peaceful and honest life, a life that was stolen by evil people in a senseless act with no reason. 32-year-old Tyson Young was arrested and charged with second-degree murder by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Although Young is in custody and awaiting the judicial process, his family and others associated with him have had to bear the brunt of the community's anger. They've been shunned by other residents and their homes have been bulldozed. They've also been banished. A First Nations leader says the homes that were destroyed were believed to have been occupied by people who were allegedly selling drugs and dealing in drugs. Even before their houses were taken down, a video showed dozens of people in the community hurling rocks through the windows of those homes. Young and seven other people have been banished from all of Haida's properties and businesses. Harold Breaker is a member of the First Nations Summit political executive. He says what happened in Haida Gwaii was extraordinary, something never seen before. As the family members of the accused left, they were met with protesters at several locations who tried to prevent them from stopping for fuel or food. Members of the other First Nations communities joined the protest in solidarity in their intolerance for the drug trade. Smogolgam is a hereditary chief of the Wet'suwet'en. He was also one of the protesters. He says the ancestors of these residents had their own way of dispensing justice. Whenever somebody was exiled from their own territories, they were expelled, and as they were leaving, the neighboring territories and all the allies were not allowed to serve them. They were expected to pass through those neighboring regions and continue on. Smogolgam says that's what was happening here. We were upholding our old laws, he says. In recent years, many First Nations communities have declared states of emergency because of the overdose deaths of their residents, most of them young people. And Breaker says it's not uncommon for First Nations in British Columbia to banish people from their reserves for trafficking drugs. Law professor David Millward of the University of Victoria, who specializes in Indigenous justice, says the native response to the events in Skidigat is an assertion of Indigenous sovereignty. He says it also comes as many Indigenous communities are trying to assert their own legal orders, sometimes even at odds with Canadian legal jurisdiction. So Millward says what is happening is a legal quagmire. The Canadian justice system would see the situation as illegal, but he adds that members of the Haida Gwaii are saying they don't care. They're asserting their ancestral laws, laws that have governed their communities since time immemorial. The Council of the Haida Nation issued a statement saying the focus must be on healing and supporting families who are suffering. A newly elected member of parliament for the area says many northern British Columbia communities are united in their intolerance for the drug trade. Police say what the residents have done borders on being illegal, criminal harassment, but police have not brought any charges against them. But Chief Terry Teagee of the British Columbia Assembly of First Nations says the decision to exile the family and destroy their homes, which were owned by the band, was made by community leaders in an attempt to deal with the drug crisis. He says many small Indigenous communities are struggling with drugs and have few resources available to help them. Provincial statistics show that First Nations are more than six times more likely to die from a toxic drug overdose than non-Indigenous people in British Columbia. As one protester put it, the drug dealers have harmed a lot of people over the years, and people have had enough, and the laws in place now have failed to stop the crisis. For World Report, I'm Dan Karpinchuk in Toronto.
Finally, we go to Turkey, where people have been mourning the death of a man who made a well-known film about military rule. Siri Süreya Önder was also a key figure in trying to negotiate peace between Turks and Kurds. He had been active in the process that led to the Kurdish insurgency group, the PKK, declaring a recent ceasefire. Jasper Mortimer reports from Turkey.
7 days ago, Turkey laid to rest an exceptional person, Siri Süreya Önder, a filmmaker and a politician who strove for peace between Turks and Kurds. A member of the pro-Kurdish party, DEM, Önder had such a witty, friendly style that he won the respect of his opponents. His death in an Istanbul hospital on May the 3rd triggered a stream of tributes. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, whose government had put Önder in prison for 10 months in 2018, saluted Önder for working tirelessly towards the goal of what he called a Turkey free of terrorism. Further to the right than Erdogan, the leader of the National Movement Party, Devlet Bahçeli, said he was deeply saddened by Önder's death. The Kurdish insurgent group, the PKK, said it would remember Önder with respect and gratitude. There are very few people in Turkey whose death would draw homages from Erdogan, Bahçeli, and the PKK. Siri Süreyya Önder was born in 1962 in the southeastern city of Adıyaman, one of five children. His father was a barber and an active socialist. He died when Önder was eight, and the children moved to their grandparents' home. These experiences nurtured in Önder a commitment to the underdog. He took part-time jobs to earn money for the family. Eventually, he was apprenticed to a photographer, a job that would have trained his eye for his later work in film. His sense of indignation came to the fore in 1978 with the Maraş massacre in the nearby city of Karamanmaraş. Önder was only a high school student, but he joined a demonstration and was arrested. 2 years later, he won a place at Ankara University to study politics. But soon afterwards, the coup of 1980 took place. Önder joined a student protest group and was arrested again. He would spend 7 years in jail for merely belonging to an illegal organization. Worse than that, though, was the torture he received in Mamak prison. Last week, a man who was in the same prison block as Önder, Professor Mumtazer Türkoğlu, recalled it was a place of complete savagery that left permanent scars on the inmates. On his release, Önder took a series of menial jobs just to get by, including driving trucks. In 2003, he saw a movie by Yılmaz Güney and was inspired. He applied to take a course in script writing. The teachers didn't want to accept him because he hadn't studied communications. Önder told them he might not have a degree, but he did have something to say. They listened to him, and they changed their minds. 3 years later, Önder directed the film Beynel Millel, which satirized the effects of military rule on a country town. It won Best Picture Award at the Adana Film Festival. With the support of the Kurdish party, Önder stood for parliament in 2011 and was elected to represent Istanbul. Although he was not a Kurd, Önder took a great interest in the Kurdish cause. When the PKK leader Apo Öcalan declared a ceasefire in 2013, Önder was chosen to read out Öcalan's statement in Turkish to a mass meeting in Diyarbakir. But that attempt at peace failed. When another attempt was launched last October, Önder and two DEM colleagues shuttled between Öcalan's prison on İmralı Island and Ankara four times. In Ankara, they met the leaders of the other political parties, some of whom were highly skeptical of Öcalan's sincerity. Eventually, they presented a new ceasefire declaration on February 27th. The declaration was widely welcomed, but questions remained about its follow-through and what the Kurds would receive in return. Önder was working on this when he suffered a heart attack in mid-April. He lay in a coma for 18 days before he died. Professor Tokoni said Turkey has lost a person of great value who represented the spirit of the time with all his dignity and intelligence. This is Jasper Mortimer for World Report in Ankara.
Well, that's it from World Report for today. The programme was edited by Margaret Curley. If you want to listen back, you can go to rte.ie/World Report or on all podcast platforms. We're back again at the same time next week. But until then, from myself, Justin McCarthy, and all the team, thanks for listening and take care.